So, in this room, how many of you are familiar with the story of Jonah? Everybody. How many of you, your familiarity with that story comes from the VeggieTales? So some. It's not all, but some. That's okay. That's okay. So the story of Jonah is one of those, it's a classic Sunday school story. It's a story that we learn as a kid, and rightfully so, it's awesome. It's got everything that we need to keep our kid kind of brains attentive. But the issue that I found, and maybe it's not even an issue, is that we understand this story based on our kind of child intellect, and then we move on and we never go back and reread it as adults. We don't study the story and pull out the message that God has for us. And so that's what we're doing today. We're going to jump right in. We've got 4 weeks. There's four chapters in the book of Jonah. We're going to do a chapter a week. And so the plan or the idea is that we take a very adult, a very mature look at this most famous kid's story. Okay? So let's get some background information and kind of set the stage. So the book of Jonah is one of 12 minor prophets. It's located at the end of our Old Testament. Most scholars believe the book was actually penned by Jonah himself. While it doesn't explicitly say that, you can kind of read between the lines, you pull out the extra biblical evidence, and people are pretty confident that yes, it was written by Jonah. We believe that the book was written around 760 B.C. And so to give you some perspective, that's 200 years after King David, about 800 or so years pre-Christ. There are some who have made the argument that this is a metaphorical story or a parable, that the book of Jonah is just a story and it didn't actually happen. The issue with that is when you start looking in the Bible, you see that people reference Jonah as a real person. So if you flip back into the Second Kings, Jonah's listed or mentioned as a prophet. If you flip forward to the book of Matthew, Jesus himself refers to Jonah as a real person, talks about the story as it really happened. And if you remember from a few weeks ago, because Jesus was who he says he was, we can take everything he says to be truth, because he's Jesus. So if Jesus believes he's a real guy, then we're going to believe that he's a real guy too. The book is laid out in four different sections. So the first chapter is Jonah's disobedience, and you've got Jonah's prayer, Jonah's preaching, and then Jonah's lesson. It's a really quick book. And if I asked you who the main character was in the book of Jonah, who would you say? Jonah, maybe? The whale, maybe? What's interesting is when you start reading this from the first verse to the last, it's God who steals the show. His power, his grace, his love, his mercy, his control, it's all there on full display for us to see. So the main character of this book, for all intents and purposes for us, is God himself. So, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go through the first chapter, and you're going to have to hang with me because we're going to read some and we're going to stop and talk. We're going to pick this apart, and I promise at the end we'll kind of wrap it all up together. So if you have a Bible, today is the day to use it. If you have a Bible, you have a pen, a highlighter, a pencil, we're going to be making notes, taking notes. If not, it'll be up on the screen. You've got places to take notes on your bulletin. So we'll jump right in. So Jonah chapter 1. Verse 1, the word of the Lord came to Jonah, son of Amittai. Go to the great city of Nineveh and preach against it, because its wickedness has come up before me. So we're going to pause here. So God's telling Jonah to go to Nineveh. So Nineveh was a great and powerful city of its day. And it was actually located in the region of Assyria. And so that would be modern-day Iraq. It's Mosul, if I'm saying that right, M-O-S-U-L, Iraq. Like, that's where the city of Nineveh was located. And God is asking Jonah to go and preach against it because they have become wicked. The thought of God calling Jonah to do this was the absolute worst thing that God could have done. Jonah hated Nineveh. They were his sworn enemies. They were Israel's enemies. In fact, if you flip back, if you want to write this down, make notes, if you flip back to Hosea chapter 11, verse 5, and Amos chapter 5, verse 26, so kind of Jonah's predecessors from a prophet perspective, they all but predicted that Assyria would conquer Israel, which they end up doing. So Jonah had reason not to like Nineveh. They were his enemies, and the fact that God was calling him to do that was the absolute worst case scenario. And so verse 3, see what happens. So Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed to Tarshish. He went down to Joppa, where he found a ship bound for that port. After paying the fare, he went aboard and sailed to Tarshish to flee from the Lord. And so I love this. So Israel, if Israel's kind of the center of the map, Nineveh would be about 550 miles to the northeast. That's where God was calling him to go. Jonah, because he didn't want to do what God was calling him to do, bought a ticket literally to 2,500 miles in the exact opposite direction. He wasn't just telling God no. He was leaving no doubt. He was done. He wasn't going to go to Nineveh and do this silly thing that God was calling him to do. Jonah was tendering his resignation to God as a prophet. He was done. He was relocating. The issue, and as we'll learn, is that it's hard to outrun God. So verse 4, then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that the ship threatened to break up. All the sailors were afraid, and each cried out to his own God, and they threw the cargo into the sea to lighten the ship. And so we start to see God's control. And so God calls Jonah. Jonah says no. He gets on the ship, and God says, "This is not how this is going to work." And so the sea starts raging, and they say it was so bad that the ship started to break up. So this is not just a little bit of a wave or a little bit of wind; that the ship was about to break up. The people on the ship, the sailors, those steering the ship, thought it was so bad that they dumped the cargo into the ocean. And so we don't know if that was their food or their water, their provisions, or if it was the stuff that they were actually hauling to Nineveh that very well could have been their livelihood that they dumped up. It's just an indication as to how bad things were. We continue on, but Jonah had gone below the deck where he lay down and fell into a deep sleep. Verse 6, the captain went to him and said, "How can you sleep? Get up and call on your God. Maybe he will take notice of us so that we will not perish." Then the sailors said to each other, "Come, let us cast lots to find out who is responsible for this calamity." They cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. So let's talk about what it means to cast lots. No one knows specifically. Some scholars will guess. But essentially, it's the same thing as if we were to draw straws. And so Jonah draws the short straw, and because of that, the people on the ship just assumed, okay, you must be the issue. Again, it shows God's providence, his power. Not only was he controlling the ship, the ocean, the weather, he also took control of chance or luck, and Jonah draws the short straw. Verse 8, so they asked him, "Tell us who is responsible for making all this trouble for us. What kind of work do you do? Where do you come from? What is your country? What people, or from what people are you?" He answered, "I am Hebrew, and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the dry land." This terrified them, and they asked, "What have you done?" They knew he was running away from the Lord because he had already told them so. Verse 11, the sea was getting rougher and rougher, so they asked him, "What should we do to make the sea calm down for us?" Verse 12, "Pick me up and throw me into the sea," he replied, "and it will become calm. I know that this is my fault. This is my fault. This great storm has come upon you." Verse 13. Instead, the men did their best to row back to land, but they could not, for the sea grew even wilder than before. Then they cried out to the Lord. And again, I think it's interesting. You start the book. They were talking to their gods. You end this chapter and they're talking to the God. So God got their attention too. Verse 14, then they cried out to the Lord, "Please, Lord, do not let us die for taking this man's life. Do not hold us accountable for killing an innocent man, for you, Lord, have done as you've pleased." So I'm going to stop here because it's easy to read that and you start thinking, well, Jonah is kind of a good guy. Like he's putting himself above the fate of the ship. He's saying, you know what? Like I'll give my life to save yours. The issue is that probably isn't the case, especially when you read further in the book of Jonah. Jonah wasn't that good of a person. I'm not convinced. More than likely, he was willing to die instead of going and helping the Ninevites. Think about that. He was willing to be tossed overboard. He didn't know God was going to send a fish, as we'll read here in a second. He was willing to be tossed overboard and died versus going and preaching to Nineveh. Have you ever hated someone or something so much that you were willing to die versus tell them something? I mean, come on, that's hatred. That's hurt. The story continues. Verse 15, then they took Jonah and threw him overboard at the raging sea, and the raging sea grew calm. At this, the men greatly feared the Lord, and they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows to him. Verse 17, now the Lord provided, again, this is God showing up, this is his power, this isn't coincidence. Now the Lord provided a huge fish to swallow Jonah. And Jonah was in the belly of the fish for 3 days and three nights. A side note, that there are some similarities between this and the crucifixion and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And even Jesus himself references this as a sign, if you flip over into the Gospels. We'd be very careful in doing that. If you make that connection, make sure you make the connection with God and his sovereignty and his power and not so much Jonah, because again, Jonah's not the best of people, as we'll find out as this series goes on. Excuse me. So there you have it. God calls Jonah to reach out to a people he hates. Jonah runs from God to the point he was willing to die instead of doing what God was calling him to do. God, because he's God, catches up with Jonah, and through his divine power, Jonah ends up in the belly of a fish. That's chapter 1, and it gets better, just so you know. So what's the point? What's the takeaway? Well, what are some adult things that we could take away from this childhood story that we know so well? And if you're a note taker, we've got 4 of them. 4 points I want us to walk away with today. They're a little bit longer, and they'll be up here all the rest of the time we have, so don't rush. You'll have plenty of time. And so the first is this. God will oftentimes call you to do the uncomfortable. God will oftentimes call you to do the uncomfortable. The absolute worst thing that God could have done to Jonah would have been to have him go and preach to his enemies. Go and preach against what they were doing. Tell them to repent, to turn away from their ways. Something that's really, really, really cool. It's kind of a side note about this particular story, is the Old Testament, the Old Testament scriptures, typically, or most generally, it's about God's relationship with his people, the Israelites. And so you read all the stories, and it's always about God trying to bring his people to him. This is really kind of one of the first examples of God reaching out to another group that wasn't the nation of Israel. And this is well before Paul and his writing to the Gentiles. God is proving here that he's not just the God of Israel. He's the God of everyone, Nineveh included. Even those that were enemies of Israel, they were still subject to God's love and his grace and his mercy and his peace. I just think that's really cool. And so make sure not to read over that without at least underlining it. It just shows how big our God is. So God, in his infinite wisdom and his love and his grace, is calling the prophet Jonah to go outside of his comfort zone to do his will. And so you're going to have to bear with me these next 4 weeks. I do my best not to insert myself as an illustration into these sermons, because I think this is, you guys get sick of hearing about me, but I relate to this story so much, it's hard for me not to. I read Jonah's story. Now, while I've never been willing to jump on a ship and go in the opposite direction or throw myself into the ocean, there have been times where God has called me to do the uncomfortable, and it stinks. He's yet to call me to do something easy. He's yet to call me to do something safe. Typically, if God's knocking on my shoulder, it's because he wants me to do something that I just don't want to do. And so I read this story, I read about Jonah, and while, again, I've not taken it to that extreme, I can definitely get where his heart is. God rarely calls us to do the safe, the easy, and the comfortable. Number two, if you're taking notes, there will always be a ship headed in the opposite direction of God's will for your life. There will always be a ship headed in the opposite direction for God's will for your life. So let me break that down. So Jonah tenders his resignation. He throws his hands up and he's gone. He's done with God. Being a prophet was overrated. It was time for him to get some R&R. He was going to take a beach vacation in Spain. So he gets on a ship and he's done. If we look at the map, he literally goes in the opposite direction of where God was calling him to do. He was getting as far removed from the situation as possible, hoping and praying that God would forget about Jonah and pick someone else. Here's the thing, and this applies to everybody in here. I don't care if you're 8 or 108. I don't care if you've been a believer for 50 years or 5 minutes. The moment that you allow it, the moment that your faith wavers, the moment that you start to doubt what God is calling you to do, there will always be a ship heading in the opposite direction of God's will for your life. And more often than not, that ride will be easier and less stressful than what God's calling you to do. Satan is a master distractor. That's what he does. We've talked about this before. He doesn't necessarily want to create devout followers of him. He just wants to distract us just enough to get us off course. And so he'll provide those avenues. He'll provide those ships. He'll provide those opportunities for you to go left when God's calling you to go right. There will always be a ship headed in the opposite direction of God's will for your life. And again, this is something that hits home to me, and maybe you. There have been times where I knew God was calling me to something, whether it be going back to school or answering the call to full-time ministry. Every time I would take a step towards God and I would waver a little bit, something would happen. A promotion would come. The kids would do something. It never fails. There was always something else for me to do that was more appealing at that time. There was always a ship headed in the opposite direction of what God was calling me to do. Number three. Let me back up. Sorry, this is important. I don't want to miss this. Christ talked about this. And so let me just read this passage here. Jesus said, "Enter through the narrow gate, for wide is the gate and broad is the road that leads to destruction, and many will enter through it. But small is the gate and narrow is the road that leads to life. Only a few will find it." He's saying, listen, following me is going to be hard. It's not going to be easy, and it's not going to be comfortable. Few people are going to be able to do what it is I'm calling you to do. Satan is going to distract you. Your sinful heart is going to distract you. This world is going to distract you. You are not going to get here by accident. It's going to take some focus on your part. It's going to take some effort on your part to do what it is I'm calling you to do. So there's always going to be a ship heading in the opposite direction of what God is calling you to do or us to do for our lives. Number three, no matter how hard you try, you can't outrun God. No matter how hard you try, you cannot outrun God. To me, the best part of the story was when the storm was raging and everyone was freaking out. Where was Jonah? He was asleep. He thought he had outrun God. He was done. He was heading to Spain. It was going to be easy breezy for the rest of his life. He was finally comfortable. The issue is you can't outrun God. Most of us can grasp the fact that God is God and he's everywhere. It's a theological term here is omnipresent. God is everywhere all the time. We understand that, or at least we say we do. Yet we, and again myself included, we tend to live our lives as this isn't the case. Sometimes it's blatant disobedience. Sometimes it's ignorance. Sometimes it's arrogance. Sometimes it's fear. Sometimes it's just hope that God will forget. Yet we live our lives as if we can outrun God. There's one thing I walk away with from this story. It's that you can't get away from God. If he's calling you, he's going to continue to call you. And that's not to say he's going to send a fish to eat you every time you do something that you're not supposed to do. But he's persistent, and he's going to be there. You cannot, no matter how fast you run, no matter how hard you try, no matter how sneaky you think you are, outrun God. Last, Sometimes our worst nightmare is exactly what's needed. Sometimes our worst nightmare is exactly what's needed. So let me put a disclaimer here. So Jonah was kind of doing his own thing. God needed to get his attention. God gave him a timeout. He needed to change his perspective. And so God used kind of Jonah's worst nightmare. And again, I think all of us can agree that being stuck in the belly of a fish is probably our worst nightmare. God used that to get his attention. Sometimes it's exactly what we need. Now, what that doesn't mean is that every time something bad happens to us, every time life throws us a curveball, that isn't always an indication that God is trying to get your attention. So the fact that you're sick or your family member's sick, the fact that you lost someone way too young, that's not always an indication that God is trying to get your attention. That could be just the fact that we live in a fallen, broken world where sin exists, and because of sin, we have death. So be careful not to put too much emphasis into this. But on the flip side, we have to be very cognizant to what life is throwing at us. Your addiction has gotten the best of you, and you've hit the rock bottom. It's the worst of the worst. Your finances have gotten as bad as they've ever been. Your job, whatever it is, your kids, your family, your marriage, whatever it is, we need to be cognizant of the fact that God can use our life situations, our circumstances, like in the case of Jonah, to get our attention. Sometimes our worst nightmare is exactly what the doctor ordered. And so sometimes when God calls you to do the uncomfortable, and when you take a ship heading in the other direction, when God catches up with you because you cannot rut him, when that happens, sometimes it takes a nightmare to get our attention. And so that's it. Four real simple points. The question is what do we do with it? How do we apply this? And so the questions I've asked myself this week, and I would challenge you with, is what is God calling you to do today that's uncomfortable? What ship has been put in front of you that you've jumped on that's heading in the opposite direction of where God is calling you to be? What are you trying to outrun? Has your life gotten so terribly bad and messed up that you finally hit rock bottom and now God's trying to get your attention? You have his perspective. See, he hasn't quit calling. He's always been there, tapping on your shoulder. Are you ready? No, God, not yet. How about, no, God, not yet. Well, how about, and now that he's got your attention, what about now? And so for some of you, that could mean submitting yourself to his call for your life. Maybe, who knows what it could be? For some of you, maybe it's the initial commitment, that initial relationship with God through Jesus Christ, who, because he died on the cross, we have the opportunity to have that relationship with him. Maybe that's what he's calling you to do. Whatever the case may be, wherever you fall on that spectrum, the challenge, my prayer, my hope is this: do not walk out of this room without asking yourself those tough questions. God will use you. He's going to use Jonah despite his ignorance, despite kind of some of his stupidity. He's going to use him. He hasn't given up on Jonah, and ladies and gentlemen, he will not. He has not given up on each and every one of you. We serve a really big God. Let's pray. Father, I am thankful and also terrified that you're as big as this story implies, that you're a God that can control everything, and that your will is going to be done. Father, my prayer for us as a body is that we're open and receptive to what that is, that we stop running, that we stop shutting the doors on you, and that we allow you to work in us. We open our hearts to you fully, and we come to appreciate just exactly how much you love us. Father, be with us as we continue on with our week. Let us overflow outside of the doors of this church. We come to you this morning, and we ask these things in Jesus' most holy and amazing and blessed name. Amen.